thing as a sub of a sub. People are all over the place testifying. So my apologies, but members will be coming in, some coming from Portland and other places. So I'd like to call the Marion County Commission on Children and Families, Mr. Withnell, Mr. Skilling, and Mr. Begler. Can I have, before we get started, can I ask everybody to take your telephones out and look as if they're on and put them on, what is it?
Vibrate. Or whatever.
Yeah. Thank you. Welcome.
Chair Carter and Committee, my name is Sam Brentano. I'm a Marion County Commissioner. If you recall, we were held over from the other day, and I'm kind of glad because I wanted to say a few more things than I think I would have been able to say if we had just gone on. I'm going to go real quick, but just some personal insights, I guess you'd say. I've been a commissioner for 3.5 years now. Prior, I grew up in St. Paul, Woodburn, school in Mount Angel, and ran garbage companies all my real life, I call it. But I really fit in Marion County and other valley towns, so I really think I know what's going on in communities, but this is what I think. And when I became commissioner, I was put on transportation, emergency management, things I had some background in, and in the last year, that's where I'm getting to, I was assigned to the Children and Families Commission. I really don't know anything about it. I'm in trouble here. But this is it's been more than eye-opening. It's been kind of a slap in the face of reality. And what I've seen, I started out hearing about all the kids, numbers triple usual, that are coming into the foster care system in Marion County based on meth problem. I'm hearing about poverty, which I didn't think really existed. To me, it's a upper middle class affluent county, and I'm finding out that isn't the case at all. And there's some specific things that have happened. I'm hearing about kids who only meals they get for dinner or after school. I won't say communities, I don't try to embarrass anybody, but children where half the kids in a grade school don't have underwear because they don't have it. And then a personal story that affected me from a coach that admitted that a team that he had been coaching, again, I'm not going to give names, was he found out that the only food his players were getting, even on game days, was the bologna and white bread he was putting out. And all this has kind of slapped me into reality, what's really going on, that our counties, especially the young people in our county, are suffering from a kind of twin evil of the effects of meth and what I thought didn't exist, but is truly poverty. So with that, just to give you a bit of background on things I'm saying, I want to get into my more prepared statements. We want to give a picture of how local problems are best solved locally and our need for local flexible resources. We have Great Start for children, prenatal to 8 children, youth families addressing local needs of children, all ages. Program's been set up in the county. State statute prohibits commissions from providing direct service. Rather, commissioners mobilize all sectors of the community, and we see this represented here today, government, faith, health, private business, nonprofit, concerns to community members to address problems and to build opportunity for health, strength, and well-being for kids prenatal to 18 and into young adulthood. And we leverage resources in a big way by enlisting volunteer and donated goods, and we get a huge return on investment. And I heard you talking, especially Chair Carter and Senator Winters, asking about this return on investment. I have one here, and I think Sam Skilling will be giving him more. But our community progress teams, and these are community members organized around high school areas, they garner a 600, and I wrote it down, 89% return on investment. So this first case you'll see of how big a little bit of help goes when you get others to join into a cause. So the focus of our presentation today is unintended consequences and some aggressive enforcement of methamphetamine, which is causing mass harm to children and families in Marion County, and how the County Children and Families Commission is taking concerted strategic actions. So it's those meth impacts and impacts of poverty that we're going to be showing you. And I'll start with, we have some pretty special people in our community. I'm talking about you, Walt. Walt Begler, Marion County District Attorney, is leading the charge on many fronts, including assessment of abused children and a 24/7 strike force that's stopping the flow of meth. Walt?
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name's Walt Begloff. I'm the Marion County District Attorney, and I proudly serve on the Marion County Children and Families Commission. Today I brought with me a toothbrush. Actually, I've been packing this around since Monday in my suit coat and made the exchange. What most of us take for granted is that our children have a toothbrush, and with our constant parental pressure, they'll use it, hopefully twice a day. The truth be told, our communities have hundreds of vulnerable children, many of which who have no access to basic fundamental opportunities that we should ensure as communities. One young school-age child rescued from a meth house here in Marion County literally did not know what a toothbrush was. Day in and day out, and we live this every single day in law enforcement as a community, meth continues to take a devastating toll on the children and families of Marion County. Since January 1st of 2005 and up until this very moment, over 2,100 children have been rescued and taken into protective care primarily due to meth addiction. In one recent very long day, the Salem Police, along with the Department of Human Services, took 17 kids into protective care from four interconnected families living in homes absolutely unfit for human habitation, ones where code enforcement has to come out and put a red sticker on the house, stay away from this location. And the kids live in these homes day in and day out for their lives, often years at a time until we discover them. And it draws a very clear snapshot for us of the intergenerational scope of the challenge we face with addiction, mental health issues, and family support. Driving home a complex and overburdened response in our juvenile departments, where we have consistently filed over 1,000 petitions to wrap our arms around these kids and their families in Marion County, making our only peer in terms of the workload that we're doing in our juvenile department here in Marion County, Multnomah County. Obviously, what we do in law enforcement drives these numbers and these efforts. It's not that we're the cause of the problem. We have to wrap our arms around these kids. This is the connection that needs to be made. The focused enforcement impacts the relief nurseries, Sue Miller here at Family Building Blocks. It increases the demands of our assessment centers. Gretchen Bennett, the executive director of Liberty House, sees those numbers surge in as our enforcement teams come out, and absolutely buries the infrastructure of our foster care within our communities. My motto is, and I brought this out, is you treat the demand, you choke out the supply, and you embrace the kids. And that is the focus, the embracement is of the Children and Families Commission. I highlight today one enforcement tool that we've put into place, and that is our Marion County Meth Strike Force. It is an effort to fight the supply end of this. It's a strategy. We recognize that such efforts and such demand will place on the foster care in that continuum of services that you provide and in the treatment needs, because we know what a gripping addiction methamphetamine and other narcotics alcohol have on families. So the mission of this team is to focus an investigation, arrest, and aggressively prosecute those supplying this toxin into our communities. That is the Met Strike Force mission. It's really a unique partnership here, and with our community, with our business community, and with the state of Oregon, because we had funding for the umbrella cost that came from the emergency board. And I can assure you, and you are well aware of this, meth is an emergency daily in our communities. The team really is nothing new in terms of its effort to collaborate across your county. So what we do is our intent is to scour every yard of Marion County so that you can't go anywhere and deliver this or be safe from the efforts of law enforcement. The seed for this team was planted through the Blue Ribbon Task Force. And with the help of your very own and with her assistant, Senator Winters, and the co-chair, Senator Courtney, we created a leadership team that looked at visionary and different ways to tackle meth on an urgent basis. And that's what the Blue Ribbon Task Force was designed to do. And this Meth Strike Force was drawn out of that process. And it looks at it, thankfully, from every perspective: prevention, intervention, treatment, and enforcement.
Anybody else in the state using your model?
There are probably not direct because of the unique partnership that we have with the business community, because they went out and said, we have confidence in you, and we will help fund you. And that's the key unique part. There are other enforcement teams statewide, but nothing that I'm aware of. There is one in down south that works in a collaborative way, but nothing like this that I'm aware of.
But, Madam Chair, just to add for the record, the community and the business community stepped up and raised $300,000 to go with the $100,000 that the emergency board contributed for this task force. And I would have to echo the comments of the district attorney, Walt Beglar. I've never seen such passion in a community, and the community in all aspects of the community coming together to focus on an issue or problem in their midst. When I had the call to arms, I did not get a no from anyone that I asked to serve on the Blue Ribbon Task Force. And I do think that it is very unique, and it's a tribute to the leadership that exists in Marion County. You have a tremendously high level of individuals, whether we're talking about the courts, the district attorney, our chamber, and the community at large, of wanting to collaborate together to address an issue. And the fact that they did not just focus on the eradication or the arrest and those aspects of meth, but actually talked about treatment and what we hear at this level, that you had to put families back together. And I just have to commend them, because I've never seen such excitement and such commitment. You know, we often get individuals who tell us that they come to us for dollars, but in this respect, this community has stepped up and put the money where the mouth is.
I appreciate this. And can I give each of you 5 minutes once the district attorney has finished?
Okay. Thank you. And that's the good stuff. So I'll wrap up here real quick. Within our commission, we have a foster care action team, and it's a prime example of the collaboration I've described that we're working very hard on. And there's to take action to recruit, honor, and sustain our foster care homes. And it's a persuasive appeal to the capital that every community has. That's the one-liner for what we're doing within that snapshot of foster care. And we're at razor-thin levels in terms of being able to have a readily available, loving home for kids that are coming out as we do our enforcement. Bottom line is that it's imperative that we have a financial commitment from the state to invest early and often. As counties like ours tailor their local solutions to this family challenge. So with that, let me introduce two of our ambassadors in our community, Dick Withnell, a local businessman, and to be followed then by the good Sam, I'm told. Sam Skillern of the Salem Leadership Foundation.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members, my name's Dick Withnow, local businessman, local used car salesman. Sam thinks he's a sanitary engineer. He's actually a garbage man. I really want to say, first of all, thank you for serving. I don't know. Everybody comes up here asking and talking to you. They don't say thank you. I think that possibly, I don't know why you're doing this, but I know some clinical psychologists that you may want to see. But
no.
But seriously, though, I don't take myself very seriously, but I take this subject very seriously. We're talking about livability in our neighborhoods, livability in our county, and we have a unique venue here of the Family and Commission of Children, Commission on Family and Children. Give you just one example of what took place here in Marion County is that there was on the front page of the paper. First of all, I was a law and order guy. I wanted the bad people of methamphetamine put away. I had no idea that when you did that, and we were able to do that here in Marion County 4 years ago because of no meth not in our neighborhood, I had no idea that the unintended consequence that these kids would be dropping out of the sky, or 2,000 of them. In January, in the Statesman Journal, front page was a child welfare worker of Marion County recently had to remove children from a home with the parents were manufacturing meth. The children had to be split up into three foster care homes in different neighborhoods. Think about that, breaking up siblings like that. We went to the Family Systems Group and asked them, how can we correct this? And the Department of Human Services said that we need to have receiving homes. In a period of 6 months, we founded and raised money for a receiving home where siblings can go together while the court sorts out what's take place and where they need to go. They get to go back to the same school the next day, and the siblings get to stay together. They don't have what they call this detachment syndrome, which is a new term for
a guy like now, me. I'll give you a little piece of data that's going to probably make your eyes grow even bigger. For each one of those children, taxpayers in this state are paying $16,500 per child.
Yeah. Yes, I understand that. And that's what we're talking about is return on investment.
Exactly.
And that's what we want to do. Well, we were able to do that. Another thing is that we had foster care. And that's another thing I want to say, too, is not only a thank you to you, too, a lot of times we don't say thank you to the Department of Human Services, caseworkers. Mm-hmm. These people in Marion County, I can't speak to the rest of the state, but Marion County, they are doing Herculean work. But we were short foster care homes. So Sam and I went together and a bunch of other people and invited the clergy, a faith-based community in our area, and we challenged them to come up with 75 foster care homes. They were able to do that. We had another visit this last year, and we had, it's very similar to a timeshare program that we have with these faith-based leaders, and we pressured and showed them the need that we needed 250 homes, and we're on that journey right now. The point is just as you articulated, that if we don't take care of the children, we can't build enough jails, we don't have enough money for that. I just want to encourage you to look at the Commission on Families and Children as a great investment, that money is parlayed into the community, and when you have a management style commission like we have in Marion County, the collaborative effort of everyone here, and you'll hear more about that, you'll see that there is a tremendous amount of reinvestment.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Subcommittee, it is a total honor to be here today. I live 8 blocks away from this building in one of Salem's tougher neighborhoods, and I echo Dick's thank you. You guys serve well, and you serve hard, and you make tough decisions, and not enough people in Salem get down to this building to applaud and watch the work that you do, so I just echo Dick's sense of gratitude.
Can you give your name, please, while you're there?
Pardon?
Give your name while you're there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sam Skillern. I'm the executive director of the Salem Leadership Foundation. I live in the Grant neighborhood. My kids go to Grant Community School. You were talking about community schools the other day. I'm the chair of the North Neighborhoods Community Progress Team, one of 12 community progress teams throughout Marion County. And I want to sort of echo everything that's been said before me and maybe wrap it all into a big basket here. I've sat in this building in many testimony sessions like this. I watch the TV frequently on CCTV. I'm not the kind of guy who wears stickers on his shirt when I go around, but this is how much I believe in our No Meth, Not in My Neighborhood effort that we have in Marion County and what the Oregon Children and Families Commission is doing. Anyone who's seen me on their TV is going to go bonkers because they know Sam does not wear stickers on his lapel, but this is how much I believe in what we're doing through the commission and through our community. as I listen to testimony, as I watched the other day, we talk a lot about agencies, 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 state, county, city, school district, agencies, agencies, agencies. I love agencies. We're a faith-based organization. We work with all of the agencies. We work with the churches. We work with the nonprofit organizations. What about the citizenry? What about the people? What about the average Joe grandmas and grandpas and parents and uncles and kids and teens? I don't hear that very often. I know the state wants it. Triple nickel, I learned that term the other day. I thought it was Senate Bill 555, but the triple nickel bill, as I read it, and I've read a lot of it, right at the top, community mobilization, not agency mobilization, not service provider mobilization, community organization. And our community definitely includes the agencies and the service providers, but we have got to get down on the street. We've got to get in the backyards. We've got to get in the front yards. We've got to get in the parks and places where average Joe people, people who go to church, people who own businesses, people who are homeless, people who have big homes, people who have kids, people who don't have kids. We've got to get the average Joe and Josephina citizens of our state involved in making differences. And I am sky high, if you can't tell, about what we have going in Marion County. And at the risk of having the other counties go, we're tired of hearing about this, because I know we come on strong, and I know the capital's in our county, and I know there's a lot of geographic emphasis on us, and I don't want to make light of that. I want to apologize. And I commend you for letting Tillamook go first the other day, because they did drive, and we live right here. So, but we have something going special going in Marion County. And I'm going to be bold and say that Salem, Kaiser, and Marion County are national leaders when it comes to the two-way street of involvement between government and citizenry, between the faith community and government, between business and government. We haven't perfected it, and we still have a long ways to go on our journey, but I'm telling you, everything that the commissioner and the district attorney and the used car salesman were talking about is happening here in Marion County. We work with our senators, our representatives. We work with the Department of Human Services, the courts. We work with the county health department. Citizens are finding out what good jobs caseworkers, teachers, and nurses do. Department agency folks are finding out that we, the average Joe citizens, care about what they do. We've got churches. We've got 25 churches in Salem that have partnerships with their local schools for literacy, for mentoring and after-school programs. We've got 10 churches that open their buildings as neighborhood centers, free of charge. They pay the bill. We help them a little bit as a faith-based organization, but we've got churches who are investing in their neighborhoods to help make them better. We've got the Interfaith Hospitality Network. Again, 30 churches opening their buildings to host homeless families right inside their buildings. Not building new shelters, not spending jillions of dollars on infrastructure. Buildings that already exist, kitchens that already exist, people that have the time hosting homeless families and making a difference. We've got foster care. You know, you heard a little hint of that. Foster care, as the No-Milk initiative took effect and all these kids were getting squeezed into foster care, the people of our community have stepped forward, not just the faith community, although we're a big one, but people have said, you know what, these folks are breaking their backs and putting out both the caseworkers and the foster parents. We need to become respite providers. We need to become foster parents. Our churches need to surround our foster parents. Jennifer and I raised our hand and said, we'll be a respite care provider to two girls that were in our son's neighborhood school. This isn't to brag or to boast, and I hope it doesn't sound like that. We are just excited about a state law, 555, that says agencies work together and average Joe citizens work with government. And in Marion County, and there's a handout that was put together by our children and family staff. I don't know if there's copies that might be available for the committee. I'll just end by saying we do it in three ways. We do need to have agencies working better together, and I know that's one feature of that law. And in Marion County, we have agencies that are working better together. We also need to have the populace getting involved, and that's what these community progress teams are for. It's for the average Joe and Josephina citizens of Salem to get involved. So we have sort of three bubbles within the Marion County Children and Families Commission. We have our consortia. We have four consortia: the Family Systems Investment Consortia, the Early Childhood Consortia, the Healthy Start Consortia, and the Youth Investment Consortia. So those four entities are what help our agencies collaborate better. That's the first bubble. Then we have the community progress teams, 12 of them, which are the vehicle by which agencies, but again, school folks, neighborhood associations, grandparents, that's the vehicle, these community progress teams, by which citizens get involved or people get involved. And then the third bubble is our action teams. And we have six action teams. I don't have them all memorized, but these action teams are where the agencies, the community progress teams, and the people of Marion County intersect. So imagine those three bubbles intersecting with each other, and under the the umbrella of the Marion County Children's Families Commission, I believe we embrace the spirit of 555, and we're also figuring out how to implement the fullness of 555. Thank you very much for your time, and thanks for tolerating my enthusiasm.
Well, thank you. It's exciting, actually. Question, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not a question, but a comment, if I might. I want to appreciate how much things, how good you do, or how well you do this in Marion County. And what I want to thank you for is there was a group of folks in Douglas County who got a hold of you because of the meth issues that we were having in our communities. And to thank you so much for coming down and sharing with us the vision that you have here in Marion County. And just to let you know that it's made a profound difference, and we have a very active group of people down there right now, a good public-private partnership that are working on methamphetamine issues in that county. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for reaching out to us when we asked for help. It made a big difference.
Madam Chair.
Senator Winters.
You gave us the investment to do the last session with the budget note and provided, I believe, $78,000 that allowed us to do the meth task force, and the director there was Guido Cosrosi sitting in the audience. And part of the budget note was for us to bring you back a report, and we're hearing part of the report today. But also you asked us to look at ways we could, this could be replicated across the state, and I think what you're hearing today is a real testament as to what can be done, and that was a very small amount of money that you gave us in order to do some of what you're seeing today. And I can't go without saying that there's huge kudos to Commissioner Carlson and other members of this community who actually believe very strongly in 555 and believe very strongly in collaboration and getting the job done on behalf of children and families. We also have some legislation that we hope that we can get out of the session, one that's directly related to criminal fines and assessments that where meth dealers are apprehended, that we can use those dollars to go into treatment for alcohol and drug. That bill is still pending. And then there's also the legislation that's down here in Ways and Means that will help bridge the alcohol and drug treatment needs, particularly for individuals who are coming out of our institutions back to the community. I think we've looked at it in this county that you can't separate the incarceration from treatment, and you can't separate the individuals returning back to this community. And this community recognized that it's not enough for us to say we apprehend and send it to jail, but there are unintended consequences with children who need services, and also we need to make the individual self-sustaining and self-sufficient, and hopefully so that they become a taxpayer rather than a tax burden. I think you see that there, and this is the focus in this community. And I also have to say, Sam Stern, who leads his effort, grew up with my sons.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You want to hurt their reputations that bad? Madam Chair Carter, just one quick that I forgot to mention, and I believe it was Senator Morissette that asked for this the other day. There was a question about what are the how are we leveraging resources in Marion County, and the commission staff did put together 60,000 volunteer hours just in 1 year, 60,000 volunteer hours, and that $14 or $16 or $18 an hour, that's about $1 million worth of leveraged resource time and in-kind that's coming from our community, not just agencies and government, but from our community.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your wonderful testimony. The involvement of the faith community, as you're describing it, is wonderful, remarkable. I'd like to know if you have a partnership with Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Do you see that as a place where, I'm going to call it your model, can be shared? I'm looking at for you to comment on how we can engage even more of the faith community in doing what you're doing so successfully here in Marion County.
Madam Chair Carter, Senator Gordley. David Leslie and I know each other from EMO, and we talk a lot. Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, their parish, to use a faith term, is pretty much the greater Portland area.
Mm-hmm.
And Salem Leadership Foundation and our partnership with the 180 churches in our community is primarily a Salem-Kaiser Marion County effort. So we don't have boundaries, and we don't have, it's not that we don't work together, we just have a focus that we need to put on our own geography. So we compare notes, we encourage one another. Together, we might be able to put something together that might be, again, if the other counties don't mind hearing from Portland and Salem again, I don't know if that's an issue. I watch a lot, and I'm on the sidelines, so if I'm seeing something that isn't there, forgive me, but I guess I'm just saying I'm extremely sensitive that if two counties have something good going, we should share it.
Yes.
But we also need to realize that every county is unique, and every county has unique characteristics, and some things will work very well, and other things will just need to be tailored. To answer the question from Douglas County, we'll go anywhere, anytime, to give whatever we have to other counties if they would find it helpful.
Well, then let me follow up and ask, has anyone from Multnomah County been in touch with you or others to have you come up and share your experience and your success?
Madam Chair, no, Senator, I think it's not going to go anywhere until you get lay leadership involved.
Mm-hmm.
That's the challenge. And you have to have lay leadership to challenge the faith community leadership to practice the faith.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's our, we have a choice. It's just a plain old Good Samaritan story. You have a choice. You have a need in front of you. Are you going to cross the street and pass that need, or are you going to meet that need?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge that we were able to do here in Marion County, is to challenge to the leadership of the faith community as well as the lay leadership of the faith community to meet this need. And that's where it has to come from, that area.
And I guess maybe our spin or our different perspective is intermediary. There's agencies within the faith community too. And we're one of them. We're faith-based organizations who are intermediaries. I'm going to confess that us intermediary faith-based organizations have kept the churches from doing the work, because we have told the churches we know how to do the work, and that they don't. We never use those words, but there's a hidden implication that it's the faith-based organization that's going to serve the poor. The church needs to give money to the faith-based organization. And apologies to all my colleagues out there. I'd rather have 100 churches opening their buildings, serving their local school, and helping families than get $3 million for our organization, because we're small and we can only do so much. But if we can mobilize, and this is where EMO is very effective and others too, we need to mobilize the congregation to do the work of the church, as Dick is describing. And we're doing it in Marion County. We have a whole, just as Sam, as a commissioner layperson, realized, my gosh, I got to be more awake to the needs in our community. We've got pew potatoes. We've got people sleeping in the pews, not necessarily for the worship time, but for the needs of the communities that are asleep. And we need to wake them up and not have them send more money to intermediary organizations, but to get out and get in the game of caring for their neighbor.
Thank you.
Well, I want to very much appreciate you guys coming here today and sharing your vision with us. So thank you very much for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll have the two M's come back, Nikki and Marsha. Members, we have approximately an hour and a half worth of material to try to cover in the next 48 minutes, would you say?
So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we're going to get right to it. So I thank Marion County for that wonderful testimony. They're doing just an outstanding job. And Senator Gordley, we will be talking to the issue you just spoke about in a short time. I am now going to introduce to you Marsha Clark, our operations manager. Marsha is going to go through most of the rest of our formal presentation that includes key performance measures, our policy option packages, the budget items, etc., and then we'll wrap up with State Commissioner John Yunker. So, Marsha, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Carter, members of the committee. For the record, one more time, my name is Marsha Clark. I'm the Operations Director for the Commission on Children and Families. And at this time, I'd like to direct your attention to Section 2, Agency Performance Overview of your notebooks, page 5. And on page 5, you will see that, that currently the State Commission has 5 key performance measures in the area of Healthy Start, local plan outcomes, our leveraged funds, and our two new ones for us, juvenile crime prevention, as they joined us in 05-07, and customer service satisfaction. So those are the 5 that we'll be reviewing here in just on the next page. So if you want to, we'll jump right into it. Actually, to page 8. Page 8 begins the Healthy Start key performance measure overview. The key performance, as it's stated now, is to have the incidence rate of child maltreatment lower for children age 0 to 2 participating in Healthy Start than for non-served families in the same counties. You can see by the chart that's reprinted from our performance evaluation that we are on target for that. And if we want to flip over then to the next page, page 9 and 10, is an update. We have the Healthy Start evaluation Healthy Start program is evaluated annually by our outside evaluator, NPC. And what you have before you are the summary of the results for 2005-06. Those are not included in the graph that you saw earlier. The evaluations are showing us that since 2003, the child abuse rates for children birth aged 2 who are not in Healthy Start are almost less than half of the rate for children in Healthy Start, not served in Healthy Start.
Wow.
If that's making any sense. In 2005-06, the rate of substantiated reports for Healthy Start was only 14 per 1,000 compared to 26 per 1,000 for those not served by Healthy Start. Healthy Start has a lot of has several other measures that are important to the successful development of children that are not in our key performance measure. However, we do track results against early literacy, positive parenting, prenatal and health care for children, immunization rates of children in Healthy Start, which are very high. 94% of Healthy Start's two-year-olds are immunized. And watching for their healthy growth and development. So there's information in the Healthy Start full report that's been available to you. So I won't go into all the details there, but we're having some very good successes with the Healthy Start program. On page 11, we've been working with Rita Conrad of Oregon Progress Board and Sheila Baker from Legislative Fiscal to make a little more sense, I think, of our Healthy Start performance measure the way that it is stated. So we'll be coming back to you with some language that we would like to have you consider for changing not the way we measure Healthy Start, but the way the measure is stated so that it would make a little more sense to folks. And that's stated on page 11. Okay. Can we move on?
Yes.
Just keep on going. Okay,
keep
great.
Going.
On the page 12, then, is the key performance measure 2, local plan outcomes, which is stated in the percent of all commission-funded activity outcomes, meeting targets as reported in the fiscal monitoring and outcomes reporting system database. This measure is typically taken at the end of a biennium, so the most recent report you see here in the chart is from 05, so we would have measured that at the end of 05. At that time, we were slightly short of meeting our target, but if you go now to page 13.
Do you have any questions on that performance measure, members?
We've taken a snapshot of how we're doing for 2005-07 at the end of quarter 6 at this biennium. And we've not changed the way that we've measured, but we've changed the way that we roll up the data. What we're doing is what we've created is what we call a roadmap to performance measurement, where we take all the activities funded by the various counties, since they're able to target issues and needs in their communities and may not be doing the exact same programs from one community to another. But they are focusing on five functional areas, and we'll get to those as we move forward on this longer report here.
One question. Ms. Benson, mm-hmm. when you prioritize the target of this 10%, are any of those your major targets that's missing out on?
Could I hear the question again?
The targets that you have on page 12, you're saying that 10% of your targeted activities had not been met, counties that have not met those activities. Were those some of your top priority targets, or what targets? Give me an example of targets that have not been met with this 10%.
Yeah. Since this is such a high-level measure, it's hard to describe it in a real finite term. But what you're looking at on this particular page, on page 12, are all county activities, no matter what they're doing, rolled up into one measure. Did you meet the target or not? And that's all of the description that's really in this particular measure. But as we go through this next report that we're going to show you, that question may get answered for you, and if it doesn't, we'll readdress that at the end of this.
I wanted to talk with you guys during the interim, because you should be able to tell so that can
yes.
be projected in your measures the next time around.
Okay, great. Okay, the first snapshot of where we're at in 2005-07 is showing that 90% of county activities are meeting their target outcomes, and 10% are not. The next page, if you go to page 14 will show you how those investments are made in those five areas of focus that the commission adopted several years ago: community engagement, family functioning, early childhood care and education, and school success. So you can see the percentage of funds that are involved in each one of those functional areas.
Define community engagement for me, please.
Community engagement would be the activities that you just heard Marion County talking to you about. So there may be some investment of funds, of time, or materials from the local commission to help support the activities of their lay citizen members, their faith communities, and others, to convene them, to engage them in activities that would, if there are method issues, create foster care. And
Chair Carter and members of the committee, you also heard them talk about different action teams from the local commission. That would include the support of those action teams and what they need for that support as part of community engagement. And I will say to you is that in the latest Oregon Shines report around civic engagement, the measure that improved the most, the biggest improvement, is the feeling of community. And we believe that the local commission work has a direct result on that particular benchmark. Chair Carter and members of the committee, I cannot tell you in quantifiable terms. That is something that we have to look at. But what we know is, in terms of the number of volunteer hours, you just heard Marion County say that they had 60,000 volunteer hours. And it's something, the volunteer hours is something that we have not captured in our leverage. But as hopefully we improve our database, that is one of the next things we are going to address, because so many people are involved. When you talk about leveraging of resources, the resource is not only money, but it's effort on the part of community members.
One of the things I'd like to have clarified for the next time is that for the counties to give you an example of those hours, because I think it would take away some of the questions around community engagement that you're using 15% of your dollars on, and then you have some measurements so that the question that Senator Gordley asked, how do you know that? Then you can come back, well, in Marion County they're doing this, and then each of the people ask you up here what they're doing in their counties, at least you could have a general kind of idea about what
Excellent.
Is being done in terms of
yes.
specific needs. Thank
Great.
You.
Absolutely. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morsa.
Yeah, thank you. Nikki, I just went out in the hall to talked to the people from Marion County asking, what are we doing in Lane County? And I will talk with you about that. I know we're doing great things, but I'm not sure that we're as far ahead as Marion County. So we want to have this conversation. I was totally impressed with what I just
said. And Jeff, can I add a little bit? I serve on the Marion County Children and Families Commission, and I would encourage members of this panel to get with their commissions and volunteer to be a part of it. We hear the commission structure is such that we actually have the mayor, business community, as well as myself and others who become a part of the planning and part of the process. And I would just encourage members to actually contact your commissions and see how you can be of assistance and help to them.
Thank you. Okay, if we can now go to 16. It just is the same data laid in another fashion. This will show you how locally invested funds are invested in your communities by Oregon benchmark. That's not to say that every county would invest in every one of these benchmarks, but there may only be one county addressing one particular area. But those are all of the Oregon benchmarks that our outcomes, the local outcomes, could be tied to. The information you're seeing on page 17 is arraying the targets, county activities meeting targets by Oregon benchmark. So you can see where some of that question maybe that you might have been asking Chair Carter may be reflected, at least on a statewide level, in this particular graph of where they're having a little more difficulty in reaching a target.
Question?
Thank you.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize for missing a good portion of your presentation. I had other things that came up. So you might have answered this question already, but so when you talk about target outcomes, these are target outcomes established by the counties themselves.
Yes.
Okay. Could you give me an example for the one that talks about reducing poverty, which is an important one for me? So 88% of county activities have met their target outcomes in reducing poverty. Can you give me some examples of what those target outcomes are and how they measure them?
I don't have that right in front of me, but I would certainly be able to bring it back to you or get it to you between now and Tuesday, if that would be helpful.
That would be helpful. I think it's just really difficult to talk about reducing poverty. And so my question is, but there are outcomes to move us along that path, and I'm just trying to get a sense of what those outcomes are. I mean, you didn't reduce the poverty percentage.
No.
And I think that's fair. If you make that claim, that's a little much.
No, but would not make
but you're doing things that are, and I'm just curious what those targets are.
Yeah. Yes, and I'm thinking it would have something to do, I mean, around our summer food programs or something like that.
Chair Carter and Representative Kotick, that is something, and that does not mean that people are reducing poverty.
Right.
I will tell you that the counties east of the mountains, you heard from Malheur County yesterday, Union County, Grant County, where they had high unemployment rates, they have focused on particular issues like daycare, affordable daycare, different kinds of things to at least support people who live in poverty. To see, they are involved in economic development kinds of things. Wallawa County is working with people in natural resources to see what it is they can do. So there are some activities. It's a huge area, but it's one of particular interest, especially to those counties east of the mountains.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So examples would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll bring this back.
Madam Chair, do we have time for you? Ms. Lansing, if you could also unpack reducing high school dropout, that particular bar for us.
Okay.
So 17.
Page 17.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The 90%, at least as it's presented here, tells one story, but when we know what those rates really look like for some populations statewide in some schools, this is not quite an accurate picture.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understand what it is you're trying to tell us here.
And Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, again, these are statewide roll-ups, so with different activities in different places. Yesterday you heard from a woman from Hood River who has an orchard, was talking about the young people working in her orchard, Hood, and the reduction in the Latino-Hispanic dropout rate in Hood River. Many of those kinds of activities fit within that particular area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's not, I think what you're looking at here is not an impact on the rate of dropout, but what you are seeing is the percent of the activities that commissions funded towards that benchmark, what percentage they were meeting their outcome target, which reducing high school dropout may have been the larger piece.
Okay.
So.
Okay, just excuse me for a minute, Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, if I can make a comment here, this is in some ways a problematic measure because it's trying to say what is the state commission doing, what is the role that the state commission has relative to what's happening on the ground in the communities and the outcomes that they are getting, and to try and roll that individual local impact up into a statewide measure is very difficult. One of the problems with the measure, frankly, is that it's measuring reported outcomes relative to targets, and the commission has worked with the local commissions in setting those targets, but still there is a variability. If you set a target low, you may achieve it and you report 100%, but what does that mean relative to a different county that sets the target higher and doesn't get there? So I think this is a measure that the commission is continuing to look at and perhaps come up with some alternatives of how to report that kind of thing and portray the outcomes on a statewide level in a way that makes a little more sense.
Thank you, Madam. Yes, and I appreciate Ms. Baker's comments. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, thank you. That's helpful. So I guess my question would be, I know there's 36 counties, but is there benefit in you coming up with those target outcomes, and then if that county says this is a priority area for us, you're not having hundreds and hundreds of different target outcomes. If your target is to reduce high school dropout, here are your targets you get to choose from. Do something to get you there, because then you get some standardization across the counties. If there's 36 versions of the target outcomes, it's really hard to do what you're trying to achieve. Yeah.
Madam Chair, and I'll ask the questions. One of the difficulties is that each county actually does its own need assessments, and based on their need assessments determine what their project or activity is going to be based on the needs of that county, which may or may not fit in with the state's performance measure 1, 2, or 3. And that's the problem, because what may be the need assessment that comes out of Marion County may not be reducing dropout rates. I mean, it could be, but it doesn't have to be. It could be like one of our major focuses here is, of course, the math and some of those issues. So I think that that's probably the balancing dilemma, and yet at the same time, it's the uniqueness of the commissions.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting because what may be needed in Multnomah County is not necessarily the same kind of strategies you need in Lane or Lynn County. So,
I think, Senator, that's an excellent point. I think there's variability in what issues and activities, but I would hope that there's some universalness in terms of the types of outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, there should be some standardization in terms of the outcomes, although the activities might be different. I just don't know if we can appreciate local diversity, but have everyone kind of shoot towards the same kind of outcomes if you're going to take on that issue. So I don't know. It's a bigger discussion, but
mm-hmm. If we were to get to 100%, for example, what would that really mean when you know that you still have high dropout rates in different communities? So.
Thank you.
Okay. Then, our next target is the one that we talked a little bit about yesterday, and Marion County referenced is leverage funds.
and that is on page 18, the chart from our performance annual performance review. At the end of the biennium at 2005 or 2003-5, the commission system, locals, had leveraged $31.3 million as stated in our database. Now, I want to just caution that our database is limited in the way in which and how it collects this data and how counties are able to use that database. And so we're currently in the revision of that database right now. So we'll have much broader areas in which they can collect this data. So our thoughts are really that this is underreported. But we have a little more work to do on that yet. We've done an update, if you'll look on page 19, we have done an update through the first six quarters, and at the first six quarters, the commissions, local commissions are reporting leveraged funds of up to $30 million. That does not include volunteer time or value of that.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, it also does not include all of our program leverage that happens in that particular way. So one of the reasons we have an additional amount in our budget for the database for the state office is so that we can get much better at collecting all of this information. We also want to be able to provide the technical assistance locally so that we can help them as they look at what is it that they really need to collect and how it can it be collected, and is there a way they can get it in our database, we can push, you know, the button and we have those amounts. And our hope is that is something we're going to be able to bring back to you next session. It's a huge area.
Senator Morissette.
Is that a goal for next session?
Chair Carter. Senator Morissette, yes it is.
And how are you going to state that goal? Performance measure type.
We are going to work with Sheila Baker to see how it is we can do that. I mean, the performance measure is already there. It's how it is, what is really included in that performance measure as far as the leveraged funds and the volunteer hours. You see, that's something we have not collected. We need to do that.
Okay, I guess I'm a little bit confused about what you're going to... You're going to create this performance measure now and bring back the results next biennium, or are you going to create the performance measure during the next biennium? Do you know what you're going to go out looking for?
Chair Carter and Senator Morissette, what we would like to do is expand the leverage that we already collect. So we haven't been collecting everything. Local commissions, as in their facilitator role, they leverage other funds. They do things. They support other efforts that really are leveraged.
Could I clarify that? I guess what I hear you saying is that is something you're going to be working on over this next biennium, is to expand that. It's not something you're going to come up with tomorrow.
Correct.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. I think we covered that.
May I just follow up with another question? Are you going to work with all of the counties when you're doing that? Or, I mean, who are you going to be consulting with as you create this?
Chair Carter, Senator Morissette, we will be consulting with all of the counties. That is part of the process. Whenever we do something, we bring the counties together and we say, how best can we accomplish this?
Yeah.
How are we going to do it?
Invite me to one of your meetings.
I would love to.
I'm volunteering. I said invite me to one of your meetings.
Thanks, Claire. Yes. Okay. I'd like to direct your attention now to page 20, which is the juvenile crime prevention key performance measure that juvenile crime prevention was transferred to the administration of the Oregon Commission on Children and Families last session. Their key performance measure is the percent of at-risk youth served in juvenile crime prevention grants whose risk factors decrease. You'll notice a kind of void of data in this graph.
And it was partly due to the transition. Well, it was mostly due to the transition. The data was collected by an outside organization that during the transfer we were unable to negotiate a good deal for the state and for this program on how to continue in that data system, and it was short of meeting their needs. They could not give us information on risk and protective factors. So we just completed the database, the portion of the database for juvenile crime prevention. We completed that about 3 or 4 months ago. Counties have been madly putting in data, and we were able to provide for you an update, and you will find it actually, this one handed out. Yes, there's an update to the findings in brief that are in your book that was handed out to you. It's findings in brief, January or July 2005 through December 2006. We are finalizing the evaluation of the juvenile crime prevention program for that area. It's a snapshot of that particular time. Snapshot. We will be completing the evaluation at the end of the biennium, so there will be information now in our annual performance report that is showing success of the juvenile crime prevention program in reducing risk factors. I think the most striking finding that we have, if you go to the second page of your handout, if you've located that on your desk, that 61%, because that seems to have a long-term effect for me, 61% of the JCP youth with at least one referral had no additional referral in the 12 months after their enrollment in JCP or after they completed the program. And that criminal referrals after enrollment steadily decreased over time. And there on the page 3 of that is a graph that depicts how those the referrals in the months of time from enrollment that were happening in the criminal referrals for the kids that we evaluated in this particular time period. So we'll have more information and better data as we go along to the juvenile crime prevention program when we submit our annual performance report.
Question? Only one question. Is there any way to denote the participants are from? I'm assuming that these are all the participants statewide.
Yes, they are all of the participants. And the database that we were able to create for them allows each program or each provider, each county, however they want to do that, to keep data on individual enrollments. So, yes.
So you could give us a printout based on counties, you know, Marion County, for example, Multnomah County, what the success rates are within each one of the counties?
I'm checking with our evaluator who's holding all the data right now. He said, yes, we could do that.
That would be helpful since we all represent
different counties. Ready?
One more.
Okay, one more.
Three more.
Okay, the page 23 is our new performance measure, customer service. This is the first year that we have had this along with the other state agencies, and we're setting baseline. We did our first survey in the late fall, and these were the results of that, and we will help with setting our targets. And this will be a part of our annual performance report in September. Okay. Page 25 and 26. We had been asked by Sheila Baker to look at some new key performance measures for two of the programs, CASA and Relief Nurseries. And what you have before you are recommendations that we would propose the key performance measures for those two areas. They're data that we already collect, so we wouldn't have to create any new data collection systems, and they are good key performance measures for these two programs. The other piece are the performance measures for boards and commissions. We continue to work with Sheila and Legislative Fiscal
on this particular major and how we're going to state it for the Commission on Children and Families and what our performance measures will be, and we'll be prepared to bring something back to you and have it for your at work session.
How do you, the relief nursery performance measure, could you talk a little bit more about that on page 26?
Yes, actually, if you wouldn't mind, ask our evaluator Beth Green to come forward. She's been working in that, sort of in the data, and helped us develop a particular performance measure.
I'm curious about how you look for it.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I'm Beth Green, Vice President of MPC Research, and we are the contracted evaluators for the relief nursery.
You're talking quality.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the measure that we use for this performance indicator is collected by the relief nursery staff, and it is a 7-point scale, 7 different items looking at aspects of parent-child quality. Staff have an opportunity, of course, to get to know the families and work with them and see them interact with their children, and then they rate the families on these variety of indicators that have to do with things like warmth and sensitivity, the ability of the parent to respond appropriately to the child's cues, the ability to provide positive reinforcement for the children's correct behavior, the ability to provide appropriate discipline, those kinds of things. So it's 7 items that are then rated on a scale from 1 to 7 in terms of how positive the parent is doing in terms of that set of interactions.
So you start by observing the relationship that has been uncoached, or do you start by teaching appropriate interaction? Go ahead.
The measure is they actually do an assessment every 6 months after the families come in. So they come in at baseline and they are observed and assessed by the workers and then measured again every 6 months for improvement. The data that you're looking at here, I believe, is after 6 months of participation in the program, what is the frequency of positive parent-child interaction. So they have, at that point, received intervention and coaching and
Okay. So it is a learning situation for the parents.
Correct.
And you start from observing them early on, and then...
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
You're welcome.
Can I ask Ms. Baker a question? I noticed we have the CASA measure and the relief nurseries. Was there any particular reason, because they're involved in more than just CASA and relief measures, that these were the only two measures?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, the thought was that of the programs that were specific statewide funded programs, Healthy Start, CASA, and Relief Nurseries are the three largest that the Commission is involved with, and there was an existing measure for the Healthy Start program, but not for the other two. And so the idea was that it would be useful because those were some of the key programs of the Commission. Now, the funding streams and the part of the Commission's activities that relate to the local Commission system are picked up in a couple of the other measures. So this was to balance out the program streams, if you will, with the Commission system activities.
Okay.
Thank you.
For now.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'm still not necessarily troubled or puzzled, but puzzled by the relief nursery. What's the goal ultimately? How you have a 70%, 78%. Target's 80%. Did you set the 78% based on observations currently, or are you just starting from scratch?
78% was the current
information that we collected this most recent fiscal year.
Okay. Now, one of the problems with some of the performance measures is that they don't move. What is the optimum number that you're looking at? The real, most realistic, how high can you go on? You're not going to hit 100%.
That's a very good question. I'm not sure I have the answer. I think in Healthy Start, we use a similar measure. Oh. We do that evaluation as well. We've been tracking that for quite a long time. Of course, the population is somewhat different in Healthy Start, although it's also at-risk families. And I believe we're seeing something around 86% and have seen that 86% sort of frequent positive parent-child interactions. So it's a frequency scale of how often parents are doing this. And of course, ideally, we'd like them to do these all the time. As a parent, I know I can't do them all the time, but we hope to get them to a level that's what seems to be, given what we know in the research around quality parent interactions, an adequate preponderance of time with a child that's
follow up. Then I would imagine at some point after a performance measure has been static or stable for a number of years, you move on to something else. I mean, because you, and that's one of the other problems with performance measures. Is that you look back and nothing has happened. So you reach a certain point that is optimum, and that's as far as you can go.
I think that's correct, yeah. I mean, definitely since this is a new one for the relief nursery, you want to continue to track the data to monitor how realistic this is, how much movement we can see, track it longer in time. So this is 6 months. What happens if we look at 12 months further on down the road after they leave the nurseries, those kinds of things.
Thank you.
Why don't you skip to page 10 and then go to the policy option packages so that the committee can have a chance to think about that. Once you leave page 10, they can think about the policy option packages this weekend. They have that time to look at that.
Page 10 of the
budget summary. Section 3, sorry. Section 3, page 10.
This is where we left off yesterday, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I think I was just pointing out that approximately 70% of our budget is in general funds, where the other funds in federal funds are 30%. The other funds in our particular budget for the Oregon Commission is primarily really federal funds that are passed through to us from other agencies, such as DHS, which passes through to us, Youth Investment or Title 20 funds, and the Family Preservation and Support Title 4B funds. And the Child Care Development Fund comes from Employment Division Child Care Department. We were also wanted to point out in this particular governor's recommended budget that 70% of the added funds back to the commission are in the form of restoration of funds, and the additional 30% remaining is expanding existing programs or is funding two new initiatives, community schools and runaway and homeless. So you're looking at a governor's recommended budget of $64.5 million in general fund and a total fund budget of $92.5 million. Okay. And then we want to go directly to...
I want to ask if there are any questions before we leave that one.
In your other funds category, do you capture the lesser... funds that are being generated, the leverage funds, is that captured anywhere in this document?
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, no, we do not capture it here in our budget. So,
no, because it doesn't give a true picture of what's going on statewide. And the other question, and I'll ask that for Ms. Baker, because I think we have talked about in the past of the possibility of maybe being able to leverage some of those local dollars with federal dollars, and I don't know if we've abandoned that thought process or not.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, the first question about the leverage funds being in the budget, they are not, but that is what the key performance measure about leverage funds is intended to capture, but as you heard the discussion, it at this point only has a piece of that. I do believe at the local level, in some cases, they leverage federal funds, but particularly in the Healthy Start program, but there are limitations to that, both because of the reporting requirements and the oversight that's required for that. So I don't know how much in addition or outside of the Healthy Start program they are actually leveraging federal funds.
Okay. Section 5?
Yes.
Section 5, the page 2 or page 5? Anything else?
Is that section 2? Section 5?
Okay. All right, if we go to section 5, page 5. It starts out with the first policy option package, number 401. This particular policy package is for improvements in the OCCF system development and local plan implementation. So this particular policy option package includes $1 million for local basic capacity, which you heard a great deal about yesterday and more today. It includes $2 million and one half-time position in general funds for juvenile crime prevention and $619,000 in federal funds for juvenile crime prevention, which is the juvenile accountability block grant transferring to us from the Criminal Justice Services Division. That one position, half-time FTE that you see there, is associated actually with the federal funds, not the general funds. It includes a request for one FTE in an area called State Staff Technical Assistance, $180,000 general fund, that would fund an additional staff person to work directly with the counties. In 1994, when we started the commission, there were 10 staff people dedicated simply to working directly with the counties to help them set targets, identify outcomes, can mobilize their communities, and we're now working with about 1.5, and they're serving 36 counties between the 1.5 of them. So it's a bit of a stretch, and actually would improve our relationships and our working with the counties. State capacity, that is the revenue resource, $500,000 in general fund, that would $300,000 of that would be dedicated to database development, training, technical assistance to counties, maintenance of the system, and some servers that we may need to purchase in the next year if we're going to, as we bring on a lot more data into that system. It also includes $200,000 to fund the state Oregon Commission on Children and Families resource developer, who you heard some about yesterday as well, working with the local, or working with private foundations to fund programs and services within local counties. Okay. Questions?
Well, the stopping point?
No?
Okay. So another part to go, so we can. Okay, let's just go. Do you mind giving me an extra 5 or 10 minutes, and we can wrap it up?
Okay.
5, okay?
Okay, all right.
So do you need more than 5 minutes?
No. Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Okay. Package 402, you heard a great deal about this package yesterday, too. It includes an additional $6 million for Healthy Start, $2.5 million for relief nurseries, which would include a half-time position at the state to help them develop their evaluation processes and technical assistance to new nurseries as they come on.
court-appointed special advocates is $1 million in additional funds. And package 403, which is on page 26, includes a new initiative. It's community schools, $641,000 in general funds and $457,000 in other funds, which was the other funds is a transfer of funds from the Department of Education to partner on this particular initiative. And then the additional request there for $1 million for runaway and homeless youth, which would include a half-time position at the state level to coordinate and work with the community.
And Chair Carter and members of the committee, at this point, I just want to remind everyone, and I know you have heard a lot about runaway and homeless, but again, legislation was passed last session. We were asked to bring recommendations back. We were the lead agency to facilitate this process. There were no new funds to our agency in order to support this work. So if, in fact, there are any new funds, I just want to say the importance of having staff support is essential.
Question? Bob Richardson is in.
So you're asking the $1 million for that?
Chair Carter, Representative Boone, to have staff support, that would have to be taken out of the $1 million. It was $1 million to include a 0.5 FTE.
Chair Carter, could you give us the information about the cost of the FTE? What would that reduce the other part of the grant by?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, that would bring about $70,000 probably for a biennium for a half-time person. So what would be left for distribution to the county?
So we'd be talking about a $150,000 reduction from the $1 million for staffing?
No, $70,000 total.
Okay.
For the biennium.
So do you have this in your pop now?
Yes.
Okay.
This is in the pop.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I think the issue is the co-chair's budget does not include either the community schools or runaway and homeless funding.
Thank you.
Okay.
Further questions? I appreciate so much the partners that you brought me around the state. It sounds very exciting in terms of the things that people are doing. And I think I saw last night where 6 levees failed in the state counties. And I know that your timing is getting really, really pushed in terms of this. And so I appreciate your work.
But you can't go yet.
You got to give me 5 minutes because Mr. Yonker has to come. I thought you were getting away. How much time do you need, John?
5 minutes of
time. Good. Okay.
Thank you.
And I appreciate the time. I'm an old dog, and I might not be back 2 years from now, so this is my only chance. I just wanted to talk just very briefly from a budget perspective. I think that's my career has been in public budgeting, so I thought I would just pass on 2 or 3 thoughts to this committee for now and for next planning for a long time, I think. First of all, the Commission on Children and Families, a state and a local partnership, the model that has built-in accountability, that emphasizes leveraging, that really gets a lot for its dollars as far as what it accomplishes, is a wonderful model, and a model that should be in more state agencies eventually. But as you can see, it is not an easy process. It has taken a long time. When I first came back in 1995, there was talk about abolishing the Commission on Children and Families because they weren't working as well together as partners as they should. And there was some question about where the money was going or how effective some of the programs. That has all been ironed out to the... I did serve and have been serving, by the way, as the chair of the Budget Committee for the Commission on Children and Families. They work well together. They ask each other hard questions. I'm talking about program people, county people, etc. And I was and am very impressed with how well this model is working. But again, that's 10 to 15 years attempts to make this work, and something that I think everybody agrees that the children and families services are so vital and so critical, and it still takes a lot of work on everybody's part. And as you listen to the testimony yesterday, it is working out there in so many ways, but there's a lot more to do. I would say, secondly, that the only reason that commission survived through 95 and through 97 was through your efforts, the legislature, saying we're not going to give up, we're going to demand good performances, we're going to expect you to work together, we're going to make this work and keep after it, and it did work. But it would have been easy to just throw up our hands and say this is, you know, too difficult, and falling back into everybody does their own thing and no one knows where the money's going. And so I'm glad that you didn't do that, and I want to thank you for that, but I want to tell you have a lot of work ahead of you. I have to say, from a budget standpoint, I was impressed with the things that are getting done out there. And by the way, my wife is a volunteer at Relief Nurseries. My son's on the board. We do some other things too. But my heart is heavy because we're dealing with children and families that are at risk, that have issues. Mm-hmm. And what's heartbreaking is the number of families and children that are at risk and that have serious difficulties and issues is increasing. And even though these are wonderful programs and doing so much help for those that get served, there's so, so many that aren't getting served. Mm-hmm. And it breaks your heart when you hear a young lady yesterday testified that she got wonderful service, but she was lucky. She felt lucky. She was in the right place at the right time. Someone knew where to go to make this work. There's so many more out there. I think in the relief nurses have told you, for example, they're doing so well, and yet their waiting list is up to over 200 now. The waiting list is getting longer, not shorter. So there's some issues in this country that even this legislature can't fix as far as increased poverty and increased drug and alcohol issues and those things. That's the part that hurts. But every dollar we spend in this area is so important, and that's, as a budget person, that's been one of our major weaknesses as a country. Even we haven't invested in prevention enough. That's where the biggest payoff is, and this is an agency that really pays off. So I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Ms. Yonker?
More of a comment and a thank you for mentioning that word, prevention, again. I can't say it enough. And it's been, since I started in 1978, working in child abuse prevention, it has been the hardest thing. It's like, how do you prove something works because you haven't solved what happened?
Right.
And it's been just so frustrating, but now the payback is here, and what you're saying and what we've been listening to all week and a lot all session from a lot of the providers and volunteers and participants, that prevention does work. I mean, in healthcare, in your banking business, whatever, it really does work, and it truly is. A penny saved is a penny earned. Is that the right one? Penny first, penny
second.
I think that Mr. Whitnell set a tone for us today that I thought was pretty, pretty important, and that is we don't give people thanks enough for the work they do. And I know when Mickey was used to be the assistant, whatever area she worked in, she first came, and it hasn't been easy, but I do want to say thank you for continuing the vision and believing that we could have a statewide effort in this state that could prove to be good if we were to just throw our resources at them. So thank you for your work. And thank you, Mr. Yonker, for engaging yourself.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, I want to thank you, and I just want you to know that every time the National Governors Association calls together states and what they call their children's cabinets, they invite us to come and present. They consider the state commission like a children's cabinet or children's collaborative, but every single time they hold a meeting, and that's at least once a year, they ask us, based upon the work that's done locally, to come and present to other states in terms of how they're doing that work. And we do have a pastor who hopefully is going to come onto the state commission, and on May 31st the work session of the State Commission is going to address the issue of how do you really mobilize the faith community and what can we do on a statewide basis. So we're very pleased about that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you on Tuesday.